Chapter 22. With a sharp sound of alarm, Cody wrenches Mace back, puts himself between Mace and the Phantom. The sword practically leaps into his hand, as if it's eager for use. But Cody can't even spare a thought to worry about that. Mace is perfectly still, frozen, and the Phantom is reaching. Its hand comes within 10 centimeters of the warblade and stops. It looks like a man, Cody thinks. It acts like someone Mace knew. But it did before, too. He saw their first confrontation. The way the ghost stepped close and Mace didn't move away. Trust, he thinks. And it's a cold, calculating thing. Trust is an easy thing to use against people. I'm afraid, the ghost says after a moment, that I don't know you, soldier. The tone grates. Polite, wary, like he's assessing Cody's threat towards Mace. And Cody tips his chin up, eyes the Phantom without wavering. Doesn't matter, he says shortly. Keep your distance. Qui-Gon, Mace says behind him, though he doesn't try to move. Who has Anakin? Who took him? The prophets, Qui-Gon answers. And Cody can hear both the capital letter and the headache they are inevitably going to be. Just great. In the Dark Force Temple, at the heart of the swamp, please, Mace, if they corrupt him. I know your feelings about the prophecy, Qui-Gon, Mace says. And Cody can't tell if it's short, can't tell if he believes it. Doesn't want to risk a glance back to check his expression either. So he keeps his eyes on the ghost and trusts Mace to know what he's doing. You say that as though you don't believe it, my old friend, Qui-Gon says, and his smile is crooked, invites nostalgia, and Cody doesn't like it. But we spent long hours discussing it as Padawans, and I know you were never as cynical as you made yourself seem. We did. Mace allows and stops. There's a long minute of silence, and then he says, Where was he captured? In the Citadel? On the approach, Qui-Gon agrees. Please, hurry, Mace. That's odd. Mace folds his arms over his chest, tone cool. Because Anakin was headed back towards the crash site to see what he could scavenge. Cody keeps his expression perfectly neutral, not even letting a flicker of emotion show. I only saw them bring him in, Qui-Gon says, spreading his hands. It took everything in me to escape their hold, Mace, but as soon as I knew they had him, I came to find you. Did he give you a message for me? Mace asks, and finally moves. He touches Cody's shoulder, just briefly as he passes, but that faint push right was definitely not an accident. A warning, far more likely. I didn't speak with him, Qui-Gon says, and his smile is rueful. I didn't think he would trust me, but I know you trust your instincts, Mace. Funny, Mace says. The last time I trusted them with you, you almost took my head off. Impatience flickers across Qui-Gon's face. Their control is absolute when they try, Mace. I wouldn't hurt you, not as I am now. You know that. Do I? Mace raises a brow at him. You can interact with the physical world right now, Qui-Gon. Why come to me instead of just freeing Anakin yourself? Those 5 troopers with him would have helped in a heartbeat. They're unconscious, Qui-Gon says. And I wouldn't have risked staying where they could recapture my spirit. Mace, please! The hum of a lightsaber igniting comes half a moment before a wash of violet light spreads around them. You're lying, Mace says quietly. Or you're being controlled, Qui-Gon. Either way, I don't trust a single word you're saying. Qui-Gon pauses, expression twisting. Cody thinks he catches a flash of grief there. An instant of resignation before it settles into calm lines. You always were too suspicious for your own good, Mace, Qui-Gon says, soft. It ruined things, in the end. Mace snorts. Your memories are twisted, Qui-Gon. Whatever is reading them is mistaken. But thank you for telling me exactly what place we should avoid while we're here. The Dark Force Temple, wasn't it? Shaking his head, Qui-Gon steps back, one hand going to his belt. Cody tenses, watching his fingers close around the hilt of his lightsaber and... scraping steps from right behind them, loud in the hush. Do you have a preference, Cody? Mace asks, like they're picking between appetizers at a restaurant somewhere. With a huff, Cody turns, facing the four zombies closing in on them from the rear. Dead bodies or ghosts? What choices? Don't get electrocuted, Mace tells him helpfully. And then, Qui-Gon, scared to face me? Face you? No, but I would hate to hurt you, Qui-Gon mutters, even as another lightsaber hums to life. My old friend. Old friends don't lead each other into traps, Mace says, and is gone from Cody's back. The hiss of lightsabers colliding puts the hairs on the back of Cody's neck up, but he doesn't turn, doesn't waver. There's lightning crackling to life around one of the zombie's hands, sparks dancing across sunken flesh and decayed skin, and Cody grimaces. Maybe he made the wrong choice after all. Still, at least a sword will probably serve him better than his blaster here. Cody knows how to use vibroblades, and he's willing to bet that the handle-end-in-hand, pointy-end-in-enemy technique works just as well with ancient swords. Just as the closest zombie raises its hands, Cody ducks sideways, leaps forward. He doesn't aim for the first one, but the one behind it slams shoulder first into its chest and it topples, then spins and slams the hilt against the third's already cracked skull. It staggers and Cody kicks its legs out, twists around a spray of lightning that hits the zombie rather than him, and swings the sword hard, two hands on the hilt and all of his strength behind it. Like the worm, it cuts with impossible ease, straight through cloth and flesh and bone, and the zombie collapses into pieces, unmoving, as the last few sparks die away. Well then. Smirking, Cody turns on the remaining three as they pull themselves up, raises the sword in front of him. He's not a showy idiot like Rex, isn't about to spin his blasters or something, but... maybe he can understand why Rex does right now. I never was a fan of fair fights, he says. Let's get this over with. The closest one takes a step forward, but Cody spins to the side, sword leading, takes its head right off its neck with one blow. A surge of power gives him warning just in time, and he leaps up, hauls himself onto the edge of a scattered chunk of stone, then takes three running steps and drops, landing boots first on one of the zombies and stabbing downward. Twists up, catches sight of movement, and throws himself sideways, rolling under another wash of electricity just a little too slow, wary as he is of the ravine looming beside the battlefield, too close to where they're fighting. Only the edge hits him, but just one jolt feels like getting kicked, and Cody gasps, forces himself up with the warblade leading, and slashes right through the next zombie, looks to the last, and finds a blaster leveled at his face, clutched in a rotting hand. Oh, come on, Cody hisses, and launches himself forward. A bolt just misses his head, and he hits the zombie around the waist, flattening it completely. Stabs downward, then rolls to his feet, kicking the blaster out of reach, and looks for the next attacker. The only one he can see is Qui-Gon, though, spinning and ducking and dancing with Mace as they fight. He takes a step away from the edge of the ravine. In the same moment, Qui-Gon leaps back, lashes out. Mace is lifted right off his feet, hurled sideways into a crumbling wall with a crack that's entirely unsettling. Cody makes a sound of alarm, ready to turn, to step in. He might think his identity doesn't matter, but you do, don't you, my old friend? Qui-Gon says, still gentle, still kind. He turns, raising a hand, and Cody feels the exact moment a vast force hits him. He shouts, but there's no saving himself. He's thrown back right over the edge of the cliff and tumbles down into the darkness like he's being hurled towards the ground so far below. There's no pause. There isn't even a hesitation. In a blur, Mace leaps past Qui-Gon and throws himself over the side right after Cody. Cody reaches for him, desperate, and Mace twists, grabs his arm as they tumble down, down, down through the darkness. They're slowing, the lurching fall becoming an easier float. Cody has half a second to feel relief before the thing waiting at the bottom opens its eyes. It feels like a tremor shakes through Five's bones, and he trips on flat ground, lands hard on one knee, drops his blaster, vision graying out for half a moment, and sucks in a breath that feels sharp-edged as knives going into his lungs. His chest aches like watching the Rishi moonbase go up in flames, and he can't quite catch his breath. "Fives," General Skywalker says, alarmed. And a moment later, he's kneeling in front of Fives, expression very clearly one of concern. "What's wrong? What happened?" Fives can't breathe. Quickly, frantically, he wrenches his helmet off, dumps it to the side, but it doesn't help. If anything, the flicker of the lightning above makes his vision spin, and he ducks his head, trying not to gag as nausea rises, shakes his head, all the answer he can manage, and twitches when Kix grabs his shoulder. "Kix?" Skywalker demands. "What's wrong with him?" "Nothing," Kix says, though he sounds even more worried than Skywalker. "I don't see anything. There's no wound. It's not..." Fives closes his eyes, trying to control himself. Something snapped. I feel sick. I can't..." Skywalker is staring at him, wide-eyed. "Snapped," he repeats, and touches Five's head with his left hand, tips his head up, looking him over, and says, "Inside your head?" Fives hesitates, not quite able to tell. "Everywhere," he says helplessly. "I don't..." Skywalker turns, looking out over the rest of the city, and there's disbelief crystallizing into realization in his expression. "Master Windu vanished," he says. "I can't feel him anymore, but how can you feel that, Fives?" "Master Windu vanished," Fives thinks, and it rings true in his ears. Too loud, too true. He didn't believe before that anything could have gotten Master Windu or Commander Cody, but now there's a gap. Something's missing, though it was there just a moment ago. And Fives feels colder, even in the suffocating press of the planet's humidity. "Why would Fives be able to feel that?" Kix asks, careful as he picks his words. "Isn't that a Jedi thing, sir?" Skywalker hesitates, then raises a hand. "Can I, Fives?" he asks, and Fives nods without knowing what he's agreeing to, but trusting the general. Skywalker just touches his fingertips to Fives' temple, a light brush that's followed by careful pressure inside his head. It's not unpleasant, but it feels weird, and Fives can't help but pull a face. "Sir?" he asks. Skywalker glances at him, and he looks bemused. "The fact that you can even feel me doing this means you've got some rudimentary shielding," he says. "It feels pretty new, though, and if something hits you too hard, it's going to break." "Shielding?" Fives repeats, lost. Dropping his hand, Skywalker sits back on his heels. "Yeah," he says. "You're shielding your mind because you're Force-sensitive. You had some kind of bond starting with Master Windu, and it just broke." Fives can't even breathe. "Force-sensitive," Kix echoes. "But we're clones, sir. We can't be. Jango wasn't, so how could it even happen?" Skywalker just shrugs. Don't look at me. My mom ended up pregnant without any man involved, just from the Force. And that's not even the weirdest thing I've seen. I have no idea how it works most of the time. That doesn't help. Fives closes his eyes, trying not to think, trying to work through it. General Windu is gone. Gone somewhere. And Fives knows that as if he saw it happen himself. He can feel Skywalker in his head like he dipped his fingers into his brain, and that shouldn't be possible, but... Is that why General Windu was being so nice? He asks, bewildered. Skywalker pauses, like the question is surprising. Maybe, he says after a moment. A lot of Jedi find the Padawans they end up training. Like, they're called right to them. If Master Windu was feeling the same thing about you, that could be how the bond started. It's not something conscious, I think. It just happens. And now he's gone. Not dead, because that wasn't death. That was vanishing, and they're different. Fives is sure of that. He swallows, scrubs a hand over his face, and breathes in. Lets it out, careful, deliberate, and raises his head. We need to keep moving, he says. Sorry, sir, I didn't mean to hold us up. Skywalker frowns. You didn't, Fives, he says, and clasps him lightly on the shoulder. We need to change direction anyway. If Master Windu is in trouble, we have to save him. Everything in Fives wants to agree. He needs to, because if General Windu is still out there, he needs help, but... No, sir, he says steadily. We don't know how much longer that ship is going to be here. If it takes off before we can steal it, we might never get off this planet, and the Republic needs all the Jedi right now. Skywalker hesitates, frowning. He looks from Fives to Kix, frowning, and then says, We can't split up. Neither of you can manage on your own on a Sith planet, even together, and you'll need the Force to get us into the Citadel, so I can't leave. Either we all go or none of us do. The flicker of an idea is rising, but Fives tamps it down, doesn't acknowledge it directly. So we all go and get the ship, he says. And then we can look for General Windu and Commander Cody. It's the best option, sir, Kix agrees quietly. Even if there are guards, with you we can take the ship easily. It must have sensors, so it will make it easier to find General Windu, too. With a grimace, Skywalker concedes. All right, Citadel first. It might not be easy, though, especially if there's some kind of Sith Lord in there. Even if it's just Dooku... Fives doesn't bother pointing out that Dooku probably wouldn't be able to get his hands on a diplomatic cruiser from Coruscant, because Skywalker probably already knows that. Instead, he nods and says, Main entrance, sir? Kix makes a resigned, unhappy noise and shoves Fives' helmet back into his hands. No, he says to Skywalker and Fives in equal measure. Skywalker grins, a flash of white in the darkness. Come on, Kix. Live a little. We can at least go look at the front door. No offense, sir, but looking is going to turn into acting, Kix retorts. I've been on plenty of missions with you. That's how it always goes. Not always, Skywalker protests. Besides, Master Windu told me to listen to my instincts. They're saying we should check out the front. Your instincts or your boredom, Kix mutters, but he follows Skywalker to his feet and gives Fives a careful look as he rises. You're all right, Fives? Yeah, Fives says, and it's almost the truth. He's cold and his head is ringing a little, but he's steady enough. I'm fine. Skywalker nods, taking him at his word, and jerks his head towards the row of lights that cut through the darkness like flares below them. Well, gentlemen, I hope you're ready for some sneaking. Are you, sir? Kix mutters, but Skywalker ignores him, leaping lightly down a pile of crumbling stone, threaded through with tree roots. Kix follows, and Fives brings up the rear, sliding his bucket back on reluctantly. There's an itch under his skin, urging him on, but he breathes through it, keeps moving. He'll get his chance, even if he has to make it. As they near the Citadel, the streets open out, becoming wider, straighter. There are fewer shambling, decomposing corpses here, too, which is a relief. And the ones they come across, they can see in plenty of time to avoid. The Citadel grows larger with each step, looming, and Fives tries not to look at it directly, even as they skirt the wide road lined with dark statues that flank the entrance, each one holding a red sword easily twice the height of a human. The great doors of the Citadel become clear slowly, the reddish glow of the lights from above casting strange shadows over everything. And then, sudden, Skywalker comes to a halt, breath catching audibly. Instantly he drops, dragging Kix down with him, and Kix catches Fives' arm and pulls him down onto his stomach as well. Fives hits hard, then crawls up to get level with the others, leaning over the lip of the building they're on. "Sir?" he mutters, then catches sight of what Skywalker noticed and freezes. Skywalker nods at the doorway, looking grim. "That's one of the Coruscant Guard," he says darkly. "Kix, know him?" "What?" Fives hisses, leaning out further. The red and white armor is distinctive, though, and the clone station there is carrying a Z6 rotary blaster, just like Heavy used to. But he's standing outside a Sith fortress on a Sith planet where no brother should be, clearly on watch, clearly guarding someone. And the idea that any of the clones could be traitors, could be following the Sith, settles in Five's stomach like rocks. "Yeah, I know him," Kix says after a long, long moment. "Those wings painted on his helmet, that's Commander Thorn, and Reese is with him. But they're diplomatic corps guards. What are they doing here?" "And who's got the authority to use them?" Skywalker asks grimly. "That was a diplomatic ship, too. If the Sith Lord is hiding as a senator, it could explain why Dooku's always one step ahead of us in this war." Five swallows. "But why would clones help them?" he asks helplessly. Eyes narrowing, Skywalker reaches out a hand, breathes in, expression twisting in concentration, and exhales slowly. "I can't reach them," he says after a moment. "Their thoughts are clouded and hard to read. I think they're being controlled. If it's the Sith Lord, they probably didn't stand a chance." Kix's breath is pained. "We have to take them with us," he says. "If we get to the ship, we can't just leave them." "Of course we can't," Skywalker says, so certain that it eases something in Five's chest. "If we can knock them out, I think I can get rid of the control." "Thank you, sir," Kix says quietly. "How do you want to do this?" Skywalker hesitates, clearly undecided, and Five sees his chance. "You just need them unconscious, right?" he says, slinging his blaster over his back. "Do you need to be right there next to them?" There's a long pause as Skywalker studies him. "No," he finally says. "As long as I'm nearby, that should be enough. What are you thinking, Fives?" "Distraction," Fives says, and gives him a grin. "We don't know who's here, and they don't know we're here, right? Or at least not the specifics. Commander Thorn won't be expecting another clone, so I can lead them away from the door and stun them while you sneak in through the front door." "That," Kix says with horror, "is a terrible plan." But Skywalker grins. "I don't know. I think I like it," he says. "They're not going to have any idea what to do with someone in Jedi robes and clone armor, and that might give you long enough to take them by surprise." And if I stick close to the Citadel afterwards, I should be fine until Thorne and Reese wake up. Fives confirms. He grins back, offering Skywalker a salute, and says, "Wait for my signal, sir." "Good luck, Fives," Skywalker says. "We'll be back to pick you up as soon as we secure the ship." "Eyes open," Kix says firmly, and pulls a bag of Bacta patches out of his kit, slapping them onto Fives' chest. "Don't let Thorne shoot you. He's got enough to deal with already." Fives rolls his eyes, but takes the patches. "Yeah, yeah, I'll be sure to knock him out gently." Koyaki. Ibtur Jatne Tur Ashad Kir Amur. Kix returns and grips his wrist. Fives returns the grip, nods to Skywalker, and slithers down the edge of the rubble, landing lightly on moss-covered pavement. Pauses there, gauging how to pull this off, and spots a clear path through the rubble, leading right to a wing of the Citadel where it extends out. Perfect cover, he thinks, grimly pleased, and makes for it at a jog, keeping to the shadows whenever possible. General Windu's robe is an advantage in the darkness, hiding the white of his armor well enough that there's less risk of being seen, and he pulls the hood up for a little more cover, moving carefully past the main entrance, then picking up a run. Thorne and Reese don't seem to notice, and Fives ducks behind the building's wing, then takes a breath. "This," he thinks wryly, "is definitely something Echo would yell at him for." After he stops freaking out over the fact that Fives is apparently force-sensitive, at least. Fives is probably freaking out over it a little. It's hard to tell through the adrenaline. Carefully, Fives tugs off his helmet, gives the Rishi eel painted on it a touch for luck, and sets his blaster to stun. Clears his throat, then pitches his voice high in panic and calls, "Commander Thorne, Commander Thorne, it's got me! I can't ugh!" From around the corner, there's a sound of alarm, then running steps. Fives takes two long steps back, raising his blaster, and as two figures in red and white round the wing, he grins. "Hey there," he says cheerfully, and gets two shots off before Thorne can even lift his comm. They both go down, and Fives quickly drags them back into the shadows a little further, settling them against the wall. Beyond it, there are quick footfalls, but he doesn't try to duck out and join Kix and General Skywalker as they slip into the building. Just stays where he is, tucked up against the Duracrete until silence falls again, broken only by the rumble of thunder. He wasn't lying to General Skywalker. The Republic really does need every Jedi, and getting to that cruiser is the priority. He just might not have told him every detail of his plan. "I have no idea how to tell when you guys get unbrainwashed," he tells Thorne and Reese as he pulls the binders off his belt. "So tying you guys up is the best I can do right now. I really hope nothing eats you." They'll most likely be fine. The edge of the Citadel is almost eerily clear of shuffling corpses, and the Vornskers are only interested in Force-sensitive people. People like Fives. It's so weird. "Sorry," he mutters to the two guards. "General Skywalker should be back soon. I've got other places to be, though." That itch beneath his skin is back, to the point that it's all Fives can feel. Like there's a string tugging him down toward the edge of the ravine that cuts through the city like a scar. The same way he knows General Windu is alive, Fives knows he needs to get to the bottom of the canyon. The two pieces of certainty are related, too. He's sure of it. Windu needs help, but Skywalker needs to get to the ship and get them all away off this planet. Kix is more familiar with how Skywalker works, and beyond that, he's a medic. If Skywalker gets hurt, he's going to want Kix with him. This is the logical choice. Fives can go get Windu and Cody while Skywalker steals the ship. Going alone is dangerous, but Fives can manage it. He's tired of being helpless. General Windu told Skywalker to listen to his instincts. Well, this is Five listening to his. Windu is in trouble, and Fives is going to help him.